Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with Dave Ramil. We just wrapped up a pretty entertaining game between the Miami Heat and the New Orleans Pelicans. The Heat and the Pelicans were tied at 102 points apiece. With about 5 minutes left to go, Miami goes on a 16-2 run to basically end the game, take the lead, get the win. That was a fun game. A lot of runs going on in that game.
Yeah, it was a lot of back and forth there. Miami started off well and then went out to a pretty early lead. By the midway of the second quarter, they were actually up 14, 45-31 over the Pelicans. And then the Pelicans went and closed the first half with a 23-9 run. And then started the third quarter with a 7-0 run to take the lead there commandingly. And then from there, it was a 30-9 run. And Miami seemed like they might not be able to come back in this game. But as we've seen on many occasions, they took the hit, were able to absorb it, and bounce back in pretty commanding fashion there. But there was some pretty shaky moments there. You could see, you know, Tony Fiorentino pointed out in the broadcast, and as much as you don't want to, you know, analyze body language, there really did seem to be a kind of, I don't know, a shadow hanging over the team at the start of the quarter. I guess to take that hit like that, it kind of sent them for a little bit of a loop, but they were able to bounce back pretty impressively.
Yeah, and then they just took ownership of that fourth quarter. 68 points total in that fourth quarter. That was a fun fourth quarter. Both teams hitting a bunch of threes. Miami making 16 of 35 three-pointers, 45.7%. I mean, it's amazing how the Heat have basically just turned into the Rockets. It's kind of the way we expected this team to play going into the season, how you and I would talk about what we expected from a style of play standpoint, and they've really kind of locked into that. And look, the Heat, at the end of the game, they did what they had to do. James Johnson scored 8 of those 16 points on that run. He was tremendous. He was kind of the versatile player that maybe New Orleans expects for DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis to be. Not to say that they weren't, but it was interesting to see James Johnson live up to that. And we're going to talk about that big matchup because that was really interesting. The matchup between Whiteside, James Johnson, and I guess we could throw Luke Babbitt in there because he's
absolutely
sort of a power. We need to talk about that. But we'll talk about that. What we need to talk about first is Goran Dragic. He's back. His eye is open. It's still very dark and bruised around the eyelid.
Sure.
And the eye, but it, you know, he can see. It was great to see him out on the court if you're a Heat fan. He scored 33 points in his first game back, 11 of 18 from the field, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, a block, just 1 turnover. Well, it was one of his best games of the season. It was just, you could tell he wanted to be back on the court. He was hungry.
Absolutely. I mean, a day after we talked about his impact and his transformation as the Heat's, you know, unequivocal leader, he certainly demonstrated. And this was what was missing against Indiana the other day when they were getting down in runs and all of a sudden, you know, looking for somebody to take advantage and come up with a convenient score that wasn't available. Today it was 5 of 9 from 3-point range. You know, he started off hot, kind of picked it up later on in the game as well. And just whenever they needed a basket, something to help, you know, stem a tide there or a run from New Orleans, that was exactly where Dragic stepped up and hit some pretty big shots. Had a really nice layup where he went behind the back and finished in traffic. That was impressive. Threw the iron shoulder in there. I don't know if you saw that as you were watching the game.
I did. I wanted to text you because he comes back in after missing a couple games and obviously suffering an injury that's maybe not as painful as it is just freaking annoying. Like if you can't see out of one eye for a few days in a row. To get back and just to be in that rhythm to make those like reverse layups and like little left-handed stuff and finding all the room. He used the iron shoulder. It was just like all that stuff that we talked about on yesterday's show from your column that you wrote for the Step Back. All that stuff just like came back. It was pretty remarkable how quickly he just stepped in right into where he left off, because this is really how he's been playing, and that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a little bit of an off night for Dion Waiters, unfortunately, but Dragic was there to carry the load. But we should make some mention also of Wayne Ellington, who had a really big game. Whenever Goran went to the bench, Wayne came in there and using those multiple screens, finding the tightest of spaces to unleash the three. I'm kind of starting to warm up to the man with a golden arm. What do you think? Is it something that we can embrace, or is it still too hokey for us?
So Heat Twitter loves that name. I don't know if they actually.
Really?
I don't know if they're using it ironically or not.
I think so.
Okay.
I
freaking hate it. When he was going off, I was trying to think of a new nickname. I was like, a wet arm, a hot arm. Like no. It's the arm is the problem. I don't want a nickname. I don't want a guy's nickname to be after one of his body parts, unless it's like an extra. Unless it's like the claw for Kawhi Leonard, where it's just like that's like his thing. But I don't know, man. It's you're coming on to it. I hate it. We gotta find a better name for Ellington. He's been in the league for so long. Does he not have an? I'm gonna look up Basketball Reference. You talk about stuff while I do this.
Wayne Ellington. I mean. It has to be something coming off of like screens or something like that. I mean, I'm trying to think like in the years prior, obviously,
Ray Allen Light.
You know, Spoelstra. Yeah, that's not going
to
work.
He has no nicknames on according to Basketball Reference. How could you be in the league for 7 years?
How about
UNC? What?
Jesus Shuttle's worthless. How about that?
he's much better than
yeah,
worthless.
He is much
Jesus,
better, yeah.
Jesus Shuttle's value.
I don't know. We're going to have to take a whole podcast. Okay, how about this, listeners? Send us your suggestions.
What's the step below Jesus?
I don't know that there is one. I'm pretty sure that's what kind of sets him apart biblically. You know, you're not going to call him Apostle Shuttlesworth.
I like that. Yeah. Apostle Shuttlesworth. I like that.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm sure there might be somebody here who's probably thinking we're veering into the sacrilegious as our podcast moves forward. But anyway, the point being, I think that Wayne Ellington played really, really well. 7 of 10 overall, 5 of 8 from 3-point range. It's so impressive to see him constantly working around those screens. I know there's going to be the occasional off night, but when he's on fire the way he was today, he's such a difference maker. I mean,
I was listening to the New Orleans.
I can't imagine how this Miami offense moves on forward without him if they have to next year.
I've been thinking about that a while because his contract next year is not guaranteed. I wanted to throw in there, though, the New Orleans broadcast. I was watching the New Orleans broadcast for quite a bit. I wanted to hear what they had to say about DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis. I was really interested, and they barely talked about those two together. I don't know. But they were just wowed with Ellington. They're like, oh, we can't stop this guy. There's nothing we're going to be able to do when he's shooting like that. They were just in love with Wayne Ellington. They also, like, they love the Heat. They were just all talking up the Heat a lot. But Ellington's contract expires. I mean, it doesn't expire, but it's essentially an expiring. Well, it's essentially a team option, I should say, because the whole contract is non-guaranteed next year. So the Heat could do with it what they want. They can waive him and they pay no penalty, or they can keep him and just kind of. And keep him until they either decide to waive him or until his contract expires after the end of next season. I'm with you. I don't know. We were hoping Josh Richardson would be like this 3-point shooter, and with all the injuries, maybe that's not happened. Maybe the Heat see Richardson stepping into that role next year. But Ellington, I mean, he's just a bona fide 3-point shooter. These are the guys you want on your roster, and him and Babbitt might not be available next year. And those are two of Miami's three or four best three point shooters. So. You know, they're making a case of being on this team. This is when you're taking 27 to 35 3-pointers a game like Miami is right now, you need 3-point shooters like those guys who could just get off shots, and they're able to they're not only able to make shots efficiently, they're getting shots off quickly, you know?
Yeah.
They're very good.
Absolutely.
They've got a quick, both of them have a quick release, and that's going to be missed if they're not back here next year, but that's a whole other rabbit hole we can get into.
Yeah, Josh Richardson also played pretty well tonight,
we should point out.
Yeah, defensively, I think he was sharp going over screens, really providing some tight defense. But he also came up with some nice scoring, 8 points on 3 of 4 shooting, 2 of 2 from 3-point range. One of those was a pretty clutch three-pointer at a point when Miami was making their comeback there in the fourth quarter. So that was really nice to see. We saw some, you know, a pretty good game from everyone overall.
I'm glad you pointed that out about Josh Richardson, because I was also very reassured when I was watching the game. It looks like he's starting to really get back. If you look at his box score, it's not going to jump off the page, but it does. He does look more comfortable. And maybe he's really starting to – this rehab process might be over and he's back involved. He played fewer minutes in Ellington. Of course, Ellington was shooting the lights out, so that's to be expected. But he played more minutes than O'Kara White. He played more minutes than Willie Reed. 16 minutes in the game. I mean, he played almost as many – he played as many minutes as Babbitt and just about as many minutes as Rodney Magruder. So he's starting to work his way back in the rotation. If the Heat make the playoffs, it'll be really interesting to see how that rotation shakes out. But we got to talk about this –
big man matchup.
Absolutely. That was fascinating. So Hassan Whiteside and Luke Babbitt are the starting front court for the Heat to start the game. Obviously for the Pelicans, it's Boogie Cousins and Anthony Davis. And it's interesting what New Orleans does. I don't know if it's much of a choice or is really just the way like the cookie crumbles for them, that at any given possession, either Davis or Cousins will be in the middle and the other one will kind of be out by the perimeter. And it just switches all the time, and you never know which one it is. And again, I don't know if that's strategy or if it's just like that's kind of the way that it's happening. But
they didn't provide any insight on the New Orleans broadcast. I take it then.
Yeah, not really.
Not really. Okay.
Which I was kind of hoping for, just so that we could talk about it, but because I really haven't watched a ton of the Pelicans games since they made the trade.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to see them on the court together. There were moments where it seems like it works a lot. Like there was one play where Anthony Davis passed it to DeMarcus Cousins right under the rim, and it was a nice like high-low action. And it's like, oh, that's like they're both so long and both really gifted passers, as well as good to or average to good shooters from the perimeter. That might be like the destiny of that two-man matchup. But then other times they just like get bogged down in bad spacing, and of course it takes a while for them to figure it out. And then Cousins had his old, spiel of technicals and stuff that he was getting called for and everything like that, which was just, of course he did.
That was an interesting segment there where he, a personal foul? And then he picked up a technical.
It was a technical and then an offensive personal foul.
Oh, right.
When he was trying to shove over Hassan Whiteside. Whiteside may have sold it a little bit, but.
I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, he just used, you know, the thing is with Cousins, it's tough. You know, you watch him and he kind of uses his arms almost like an offensive lineman just to kind of extend and create space that way. And it's just, well, this is, you know, not football, it's basketball. And so it's kind of difficult to watch. And then conversely, he also mixes it up where he gets into this tangle of limbs and then kind of like pleads to the referee saying, how can we get into this entanglement and not call a foul? And it's like, well, you kind of instigated it. And Tony Brothers was not having any of that. Tony Brothers, who's been typically somebody that Heat fans do not like as far as his officiating is concerned, but he did not really want to hear anything from Cousins, called him for that foul and then gave him the tech, or vice versa, rather. And, it was a touch-and-go situation where, you know, Cousins could have picked up another technical pretty easily, but, you know, Alvin Gentry brought him back to the bench, calmed him down a little bit, and then I don't think he was into any other major altercations after that. You know, the occasional foul here and there, but nothing major, and he was able to play through the whole game.
He had five fouls. But Cousins and Davis combined for 46 points, which looks good on paper, but they were 15 of 34 from the field, which is not bad if it's a couple of guards, but not good if it's a couple of big men who should be scoring a lot more near the rim than they are, and they weren't. As I think you pointed out before we started recording, they both were shooting quite a bit of shots from the perimeter, and that's, you know, you've got to give Miami's defense credit, because you'd imagine if Cousins and Davis had their way, they'd be shooting a lot more point at the rim than they were. Can we just like quickly mention Luke Babbitt? And just, I can't believe what I'm about to say here. Like defensively, holding his own. Like there was a few moments where he didn't, but for the most part, when you're looking at, if you put Luke Babbitt and DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis next to Luke Babbitt, you're like, oh, these guys are both going off for 100 points tonight.
Right.
And that's not what happened at all. Babbitt had a nice job.
He did the best he possibly could. It was interesting, his matchup with Anthony Davis, obviously both teammates last year with New Orleans. You wonder if maybe there was some familiarity there on Babbitt's end.
Would it even matter, though? Like, maybe it does, but, like, does it even matter if he, like, if Babbitt, like, hypothetically knew every move that Anthony Davis was going to make, it shouldn't matter. Anthony Davis is twice as long and 100 times as good as Luke Babbitt.
You know, Babbitt's probably not strong enough to contend with either Davis or Cousins, or not probably. He's definitely not strong enough. Let's just say that.
Yes.
But he is long-limbed, and they kind of – he's good at harassing players, kind of reaching over a little bit, not letting them get into their comfort zone offensively there. You know, there was one particular play when Cousins just backed him down and abused him pretty badly. But again, this is a guy who outweighs him probably by a good 50, 60 pounds. Other than that, I think he did his best. You know, he tried to fight over screens, or, you know, tried to get out of the way in screen and roll situations.
Pesky. I mean, Miami's whole defense is just – they're not – like, they're not going to stand up one-on-one necessarily well all the time. But as a team defense, as a team that fights over screens and is able to just stay in front of people, they're, like, they don't necessarily do it with skill, but they just do it with just being annoying and harassment. Like, they just harass offenses, maybe even more so than they just guard them. They just harass the crap out of them. It's
two
never...
things, like, I want...
Yeah.
No, sorry. Two things I wanted to bring up. One... James Johnson fronting Boogie Cousins in the low post in the fourth quarter. Did you see that play?
I did.
That was amazing. And again, you have to assume that Cousins' interaction with Tony Brothers early on, or maybe something the refs spoke amongst themselves and just said, you know what, we're going to let him play. Because that was a really, really physical matchup there. And, you know, you would think James Johnson was completely overmatched given Cousins' height and size advantage. But he stayed with him, just moving limbs, moving legs, getting tangled up, going back, going in front. I mean, it was just total outworking and a wonderful thing to say. I mean, to see, rather. And it was really, really impressive. So that was great. And then secondly, did you notice, well, you probably didn't see Whiteside getting pulled out of the game early in the first quarter, then sitting down for like a minute and then coming back in? What was that all about? Was there any insight as to what White that might have been?
Yeah, I lost connection just for like right at the end of the second quarter. So, but only for a few minutes. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what that was about in the early of the first quarter. I don't know if it was. Yeah, I don't know. Because he didn't.
There was a lack of energy from Whiteside early on. Like he wasn't handling the
screen. I mean, he got
a
couple of fouls early too. Like, I'm not sure what it was. But I want to talk about Whiteside in a positive light because he had a great game. He had as many rebounds as Davis and Cousins did combined.
Yeah.
Four offensive rebounds, which were all valuable. Two blocks. One that he had against, was it Cunningham, I think, maybe?
It was. Yeah,
on the perimeter, which was huge.
Yeah. It kind of after I think the play before he had kind of they had committed a foul and it was something to do with how he hadn't switched properly, so I think he kind of got pissed off a little bit. And then to see Cunningham pull up, you know, he just was able to run over there and extend, and you see that incredible length of his just swatted right into Alvin Gentry's lap on the sidelines. That was kind of hilarious.
Yeah, I was also impressed with Whiteside's screening. I don't know if I tweeted that or not during the game, but I thought there was a few times there where Whiteside just laid a good screen, and that was useful for Dragic, who of course had a big game that was useful for Waiters, but particularly with Dragic, I was very impressed with Whiteside's screen game. And this was a good good Whiteside night. You know,
yeah.
we talk about the good and the bad of Whiteside. This was one of those good Whiteside nights, which was really reassuring because we've talked about how maybe he doesn't rise to the occasion playing against other, you know, top centers, and he was playing two top centers essentially tonight. You know, you can call Davis a center.
I thought you were referring to Alexis Ayinka.
Oh, I think it's Ajinsa. Isn't it Ajinsa?
Okay, whatever.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I like Ajinsa. He's like the next Dwayne Dedman. He just needs to find a spot to play.
Oh, God. Yeah. I don't think you're right about that. I'm sorry. I'd love to agree with you.
We've already talked too much about Ajinsa. But I thought he had – I thought Whiteside really rose to the occasion. That was a big game. From 9 out of 11 from the field, he was efficient where Anthony Davis and Cousins weren't. I think he went – it was the first several minutes of the game where he didn't even take a shot.
Right.
But he had 5 rebounds before he took a shot. And the Heat broadcast crew, I was switching back and forth throughout the game – I think it was Eric Reed had mentioned that, and he kind of was like, oh, that's kind of weird. And I was like, no, that's fantastic. Like, if Dragic is coming out of the gates the way as he was, as aggressive as he was, and this team was able to get out and score some points early without Whiteside, but he's still grabbing 5 rebounds, like, he's still working the boards despite not getting his shot up, that's huge. And I think that set the tone for the rest of the game for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Should Ballie also point out Tyler Johnson with a season-high 9 assists, kind of taking over that playmaking role there. Deon only played 29 minutes today. He was clearly struggling a little bit with his shot. It was good to see Tyler Johnson taking control there of the second unit offensively and really using screens really well, looking to get his teammates open. He finished 4 of 9 overall with 10 points. Not a bad night, but not a great one. But, offensively, he was still contributing by finding his open teammates. And again, a season high 9 assists, very good.
So as we're recording this, Memphis just beat the Chicago Bulls 98-91. That means that the Bulls are now 32-36. Miami with their win, they're 33-35. So we've leapt over the Chicago Bulls. We are tied with the Pistons. We're tied with the Pistons. Milwaukee plays the Clippers later tonight on a West Coast game. But if the playoffs started tonight or right now, Miami would be in the playoffs with the 8th seed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I guess because we've played one more game or two more games in the Bucks, we're just 32-34. So I guess we have some kind of a tie-breaking advantage there. I'm not sure exactly.
Well, it'll be one more game after tonight, I guess, because Milwaukee plays later. I think we'd be a half game up over Milwaukee because we'd have a win. I don't know. I don't know if Milwaukee wins tonight, if they beat the Clippers, and the Clippers are playing well later. But lately, so they'd be the 8th seed. But either way, like Miami, Detroit, Milwaukee, that's essentially what that amounts to by the end is a 3-way tie for the 7th and 8th spot.
Yeah, I mean, bears repeating as we have before. 11-30 start. All of a sudden, Miami has won 22 of their last 27 games.
Right. Yeah,
incredible run there for the Heat.
So, all right, who do we play next?
The Minnesota Timberwolves were also playing particularly well. That's a Friday night game. This was the first night of a 5-game homestead. They come back on Friday to face the Timberwolves. Despite the loss of Zach LaVine, they've been getting some pretty good consistency there out of Andrew Wiggins, who's been playing great. Karl Anthony Towns, as always. So that's going to be an interesting matchup. Another guy who plays alongside the perimeter, how they match up with him, with Whiteside or Willie Reed kind of trying to hold their own, that should be interesting.
Looking forward to that. But for now, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.